Raviona Reese, Thursday, August 4th, 2016. This is Rosh Chodesh Av. The topic is When Politics and Halacha Collide, the Truth About the American Rabbinate, the Israeli Rabbinate, and the Validation Process for Jewish Conversions. It's going now.
Okay. Even though it's starting at 15 minutes?
Yeah.
We got programs here, programs, scorecards. Okay, we have two more minutes. Do we begin? 8:15 is 8:15. Phone says 8:14. Is yours say 8:15? We ready to start? Okay. We'll start the introduction, and because it's a little longer than usual. First of all, welcome everybody to the special added program for the Beit Shemesh Community Beit Midrash program for the summertime. We're very excited to have Raviona Reese with us. We'll get to the topic in a second. We want to thank Mrs. Marion Reese and family for sponsoring this year, in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Mr. Harry Reese, Zichrono Livracha, father of Rabbi Yonah Reese, Linda Willicky, and Wendy Schindler. We want to thank you very much, Mrs. Reese, for sponsoring this wonderful event, an opportunity to commemorate a yahrzeit with Torah is a very significant thing. Today's shir, again, is our ninth shir of the year. Baruch Hashem, it's going very well. We're looking forward to everyone joining us next Friday morning, the 12th, for a Kol Yom Shish 15 davening, 9 o'clock breakfast. You can't have a problem with that food. If you feed them, they will come. 9 o'clock breakfast, 9:30 will be shir number one, followed by shir number two at 10:30 approximately. Rabbi Reese will be talking on the topic, When Politics and Halacha Collide, the Truth About the American Rabbinate, the Chief Rabbinate of Israel, and the Validation Process of Jewish Conversions. Rabbi Reese is a prolific rabbi. He's written many svarim, many articles in Torah, and he's a chaver in the Beit Din of the Beit Din of America, the Av Beis Din of Chicago, Bill Council Rosh Hashiva at Reitz. There's so many different things here, so it's too many to list, but Rabbi Reitz is the expert in this field, in this area. Was actually one of the people that was intimately involved with the GPS from its start. Okay, we're honored to have him here, and of course, he's a dear friend and a colleague. So without further ado, I'd like to ask Rav Yonah Reitz to honor us with this shiur.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Thor. Rabbi Thor and I go back a long way. I think when we were together in the Smicha program at Yeshiva University, at Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, and it's very exciting to see the wonderful work that he's doing here in Beit Shemesh and in Eretz Yisrael in general on behalf of Klal Yisrael. So I picked something relatively non-controversial. Figure. Keep things simple and straightforward. But it's a very important topic, and there's been a lot of heat lately in the newspapers, in the media, regarding conversion controversies, particularly when it comes to the question of who's authorized to perform conversions. Which conversions to Judaism will be considered acceptable, will not be considered to be acceptable, who gets to decide what's considered to be acceptable. So there's been much heat, but very little light. And the purpose of the presentation this evening, just to be very clear from the outset, is not to push a particular point of view. From a halakhic standpoint, there are different points of view halakhically as to what are the criteria for proper conversion. And we're not choosing amongst those different positions. The main purpose of the presentation tonight is to provide some helpful context in terms of going through Mekoros, going through some of the fundamental sources so that we can gain a better appreciation of the issues, and to present some of the factual background. Now, when I say the factual background, obviously different people in different vantage points will have a different perspective of the facts. So my view of the facts is simply based on my first-hand experience on the ground in terms of what I've seen, what I've done, and what I have experienced. Others who have been involved in other aspects of this process, whether from the standpoint of Eretz Yisrael or otherwise, may have different facts that they would be able to present. However, the amount of information that I am directly privy to, based on the positions that I've served, over the years will be helpful in this context. I began working in the realm of Geirus probably around 19 years ago, in 1997, which is when I began to work part-time at the Beit Din of America. I became the director of the Beit Din of America in 1998, served in that position for 10 years until 2008, when I became the dean of Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. I took on the position of Chaver Beis Din of the Beit Din of America, and in 2013 I became the Av Beit Din of the Chicago Rabbinical Council, and throughout this entire period I've been involved in various degrees in the enterprise of Giyur, either in terms of participating as a dayan in the Giyur process myself, and also in terms of dealing very closely with the Rabbanut HaRashit here in Eretz Yisrael with respect to their own internal processes as to how they go about recognizing conversions, and also in terms of requests that were presented throughout this period to the Betin of America for Ishurim, for certifications of conversions that other performed. So I saw how the Ishur certification process worked, the advantages and the disadvantages of that system. And it's true, I was also involved at the time of the creation of what's now called the GPS network of Batei Din, which is a group of rabbinical courts. Most of them had been pre-existing rabbinical courts. Some of them were established since the creation of the network that operated according to a set of principles and guidelines that were articulated by the Rabbinical Council of America in conjunction with the Beit Din of America regarding protocols of conversion. Now, I'm sure that a number of you have questions and comments that you're itching to make. I would ask that questions be held until the end of the presentation. I make a commitment, Bli Neder, emphasis on the Bli Neder, not to go on for too long. So as long as you keep track of the questions that you want to ask, hopefully there'll be ample time for that at the end. My intention is not to speak for more than 45 minutes, and I've already spoken for about 7. Now, the starting point of the discussion is that we have always struggled throughout the centuries, throughout the millennia. This is just built in to the system of the Torah, built in the reality of Klal Yisrael. We've always struggled with doing conversions properly. This is epitomized in the statement in the Gemara Kiddushin, if I am in base, elsewhere as well. Amar Rabbi Chelbo, Koshim Gerim Lisok Es Tapachas, that converts, or really, I suppose, more precisely, conversions, have been difficult for the Jewish people like a scab on the skin. It doesn't sound like a very complimentary statement. We have another overriding principle of Avtem Es Hager, that we're supposed to love the ger, we're supposed to love the convert, and various Rishonim, including the Tosfos Harosh and Masechta Shabbos, understand that included in the midst of loving the convert is loving the conversion process. That when there is somebody who is interested, is sincerely interested in converting to Judaism, we're supposed to assist demonstrating Koshim Gerim Lisok Es Tapachas, that it's such a difficult thing. It's like having a scab on the skin. So different explanations that are given. So Tosfos and Kiddushin on the spot, that brings one explanation that it's difficult because sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes the convert ends up not being terribly observant, and as a result, they may bring down the observance level of the community. Another explanation is because there are so many obligations that Klal Yisrael, that everyone has towards the way that Gerim converts are supposed to be treated. There are potentially 24, 36, or 46, depending on how you count it, places in the Torah that command us about how we have to be particularly sensitive to the feelings and the needs of a convert. Lo sonu es ager, lo sonu es ager, lo sochatzenu. Can't oppress the ger, you have to love a ger. And it's difficult to observe all of these mitzvos properly. So therefore, that's why it's very, very difficult. And then finally, Tosfos brings the opinion of Rabbi Avraham Ager, somebody who appears to have been among the Baalei Tosfos, who was a convert himself, who said that the reason why it's difficult is because converts are so sincere and are so incredibly scrupulous about the observance of mitzvot that they make everybody else look bad. So that's the reason why it's kosher. And the Rav Melech Schechter, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, pointed out, this is really what we mean when we say kashim. What's really hard is that you don't know which direction it's going to go. You can make a mistake either way. You can make a mistake of turning down somebody who would be a proper convert, who would show everybody else the way to behave, but the person is not treated properly in the process and they're turned away. And you can make a mistake in the opposite direction of bringing in somebody who's really not sincere, who's not going to be a proper convert within the Jewish nation, and accept that person for conversion when it's not warranted, and that can also bring about a disastrous result. So that's why it's kashim. It's very, very difficult because you're challenged. Either way, it's almost like a double-edged sword. It's both a challenge and a responsibility. The Netziv, interestingly, makes the comment in his commentary to the Torah in Parshas Vayikra, why is it called a scab? Why specifically this analogy? He says because the scab is stuck on the skin. And so too, we're stuck with this problem. We're stuck with this problem, and sometimes it's vexing. Sometimes it causes a lot of controversy. It causes a lot of heat. It causes a lot of disagreement. But nonetheless, we have a real responsibility to deal with this issue, and to deal with this issue properly, and to deal with this issue compassionately. So in this regard, there was always, if you look at what Chazal had to say about the process of conversion, there was always a notion of there being a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. It was always a lechatchila, it's always what was considered to be the preferable or ideal ways to go about conversion, and b'di'evit, would be after the fact considered to be acceptable but not ideal. Perhaps a prime example of that is the discussion in the Gemara in Yevamos about how you're not supposed to accept a convert who's only converting for the sake of marriage. But the Gemara says that, quotes Rav, that halakha kulam geirimim, that b'di'evit, after the fact, if somebody was accepted as a convert who was only converting for the sake of religion, b'di'evit, the conversion was performed, was for the sake of, religion would be good, for the sake of marrying a Jewish spouse, that b'di'evit, the conversion, b'di'evit, the conversion would be good. And then later, authorities later poskim, thank you, later poskim, Trinity, especially when there are problems of rampant intermarriage, sometimes it's better to relax that standard a little bit. If it can be determined that a conversion can be performed, at least in a fashion that b'di'evit after the fact would be good, so maybe in certain contexts, in certain situations, in certain communities, certain times in history, maybe that should become a lechatchila, that we should allow such conversions to be done altogether. So there was always a tension. It's a tension between what we call a bezdin shamuchin, what the Rambam speaks about, a proper bezdin, a properly convened bezdin, and a bezdin shel hegyotos, a bezdin that violates the basic norms, the basic rules, accepts converts during times when you're not supposed to accept converts. Like the Gemara talks about not accepting converts when the Jewish people are really flourishing and they're very wealthy and they're very respected, because you have to suspect that the motivation for conversion is just to be able to partake in the wealth and the honor and the glory, and not because the convert is sincere. But nonetheless, if a bezin shel hayotos, if there was a rabbinical court of people who were not so proficient and they performed the conversion anyway, so that would still count as a valid conversion. We always had that notion. The Rav Soloveitchik spoke about the distinction between geir tzedek, we call the righteous converts, and Geirim Geruim, and the converts who are sort of the lower level converts who don't justify necessarily the royal treatment because they don't remain so steadfast in their observance after conversion, but where nonetheless the conversions could still, technically speaking, be valid. So there's always this sense of the sense of tension, the sense of when to apply what standard. When to apply the ideal standards, the strictest standards, the most exacting standards, and when to relax the standards a little bit based on the situation, based on the context. There's a famous article by the late Rav Unterman, who wrote that he thought that maybe when it comes to the Russians, who were making Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, and they weren't always necessarily prepared to be 100% observant in terms of what we would consider to be all of the requirements of accepting the yoke of commandments of the Torah, then he wrote an argument as to why he thought that one could perhaps relax that standard when dealing with the possible loss of an entire population that was written decades ago and is still hotly contested, still hotly debated up until this very day in Eretz Yisrael. There were always these tensions, and this very sense of tension is captured already in the Rambam, in the writings of the Rambam, when the Rambam talks about how the wives of Shlomo and Shimshon, who came from foreign nations, were able to be converted, when it appears that they didn't really give up their previous ways or their previous affection for idolatry. It's a long passage at the end of Perek Yud Gimel of Hilchos Yisuri Bia and the Rambam. It's in source 27 of the materials, in which the Rambam himself goes back and forth and forth and back in terms of if somebody converted for ulterior motives, they were just converting for marriage and they weren't completely sincere, and then they weren't so perfectly observant afterwards, is the conversion valid or is it not valid? So one place, within the span of about 15 sentences, the Rambam writes in one place that Hochiach Sofan Al-Tfilasan, clearly the way they acted at the end shows that the conversion was not valid. In another place, the Rambam writes, Apilu Chazov Yavad Akam Areyoki Yisrael Mumar, even if they went back to their previous ways, they're just considered to be an irreligious Jew, but the conversion is valid. And in another place, the Rambam says, Kol Shilema Chitira Harisam, we're not really sure whether the conversion is valid or not, so we just kind of, everybody struggles. And as you can imagine, everybody has different versions that some say the Rambam meant the first thing, some say meant the second thing, some say meant the third thing, and some say meant all three. How could you mean all three? You know, you're right again. How could you both be right? Yeah, you're right too. There's so much attention and there's so much confusion when it comes to this issue, and maybe that's really the point that the Rambam was making. It's really, really confusing. But what we do know is that there are certain basic fundamentals of what needs to be present in order for a conversion to be valid. That's the Gemara in Croesus, technically source number one, that tells us that the process of conversion has to follow in the ways of the manner in which our forefathers entered into the Bris, received the Torah at the time of Kabbalah Har Sinai, when the Torah was given. The Gemara derives from various psukim that the men had bris milah, both the men and the women immersed in a mikvah, they had tefillah, and the Gemara elsewhere in Maseches Yevamos, Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis, that's the third source, says that everything had to be done has to be done in front of a Beis Din as well, because it says Mishpat Echad Yeh Lachem Lager, that a mishpat that they gave us a conversion is like a court procedure, and a court procedure requires three judges, and therefore we know that a conversion, in order to be valid, requires these various elements. There's one element that the Gemara in Croesus leaves out, though. The Gemara in Croesus leaves out Kabbalas Ol Mitzvos, the acceptance of the yoke of commandments. So is that required? Is that not required? The Rambam seems to say it's a matter of fact. The Rambam, source number two here in Hilchos Yisuri Bia, says whenever throughout the Jewish people enter into the covenant with the bris milah and immersion, also they had to bring a korban. Nowadays we don't have korbanos, so the Gemara says, well, since we know that to converge, that there will be converts throughout the generations, the Torah says in Sefer B'midbar, V'chi yagor itchem ger asher b'sochechem l'doroseichem, there will always be converts throughout all the generations. So we know that even when a korban, a sacrifice, can't be brought by a ger, you could still have gerus, you could still have conversion anyway. So therefore we can dispense with that, at least during the time that there's no Beis HaMikdash. However, these other elements are always required, that if you knew that somebody went through a conversion process and they didn't go into the mikvah, they're simply not a convert. You know that a man converted to Judaism and he didn't have a bris milah, it doesn't matter how compassionate you want to be, how much you want to say, oh look, he really wants so badly to be Jewish, and look, he went through a conversion procedure, he didn't have a bris milah, it just doesn't work, it doesn't count. So too, if a person went through a conversion procedure and there was no Beis Din involved, so that would, based on the Gemara and Yevamos, that would also be a problem. What if there was no Kabbalas Ol Mitzvos? What if there was no acceptance of the Yoke of Commandments? Where did we have acceptance of the Yoke of Commandments at Har Sinai? Well, that's pretty simple. Nasa Menishma. That was the cornerstone. So the Rambam says, V'yikabal Lav Ol Torah. When a person's prepared to go through this ritual, V'yikabal Lav Ol Torah, and they're going to accept the Old Torah, they're going to accept the Yoke of Commandments, so then they have to go through these procedures. So lot of commentaries. There's an article by the late Rav Bezalel Zolti about this. Explain the Rambam that what the Rambam's saying is that the Gemara didn't have to spell out Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos, the acceptance of the Yoke of Commandments, because it's obvious. That's like a prerequisite. That's what ger means. So it means to be a ger, to join the fold of the Jewish people. Then that means you're accepting the Torah, just like this is how the Jewish nation was created, through Har Sinai, through accepting the Torah at Har Sinai. Just the same, it should be pointed out that there have been various authorities, including Ben Zion Uziel, former Sephardic Chief Rabbi of Israel, including a comment made by Rav David Zvi Hoffman and others as well, suggesting that maybe it's left out because somehow, even though it's a good and proper thing that a ger should accept upon himself all of the mitzvot, but if he didn't explicitly, so maybe that wouldn't invalidate the conversion. So Gemara and Rechoros, it said, Moshe Feinstein and others interpret it at face value, that it means that if a convert says explicitly, I'm accepting the entire Torah, but Shabbos, not for me, or Yontiv, not for me, or you know, this meat and milk thing, not for me, so then the conversion would be automatically invalid. But some say, as long as the ger doesn't say anything, didn't you know expressly eliminate exclude a specific mitzvah from what the ger was going to take upon himself, just didn't say anything, even if the ger in his mind, in his heart of hearts, had in mind not to accept mitzvah, so that wouldn't necessarily invalidate the conversion. So there's a lot of discussion about this, a lot of questions about different standards, different positions about what's me'akev, what would invalidate the conversion, what b'di'evid would cause the conversion to be valid. So it's a famous comment in this regard by Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. That's in the comment of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is a little bit later. Jump around a little bit. Source 20, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says he seems to say that if a convert would not accept mitzvos, then the convert would not be a valid ger. But in any event, even if a bezdin in a rabbinical court thought that such an individual was a valid convert, but the reality is that they're not. The best, and even according to their own point of view, that they think the person is a valid convert, is guilty of lifnei iver. They're guilty of causing somebody to sin, because before the person became Jewish, then they were not going. They're not liable for violating any of the transgressions of the Torah. After they become Jewish, then they become liable for violating transgressions of the Torah. So therefore, by bringing such a person into the fold of Judaism, the Beis Din itself is guilty of lifnei iver, of facilitating sins, because they're facilitating all the sins that this person is going to commit. Now, there's a question as to the correct nusach. I see Chuck is over here. He sent me an article. It's an article by Rav Yoel Amital. She points out there was a previous version of this tshuva by Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in which Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach did not say explicitly that the conversion is definitely no good. But what he says is that even if the conversion is good, even if, according to his own opinion, the conversion might be good, nonetheless, a Beis Din should not, in the first instance, bring somebody into the fold of Judaism who they know or very strongly suspect is going to violate averus, is going to violate sin. So there are really two questions then in this regard that contemporary rabbinical courts and contemporary rabbinic bodies have to deal with, which is, number one, is a conversion valid if it's pretty clear that the convert is not going to accept the yoke of commandments? And number two, even if the conversion is valid, is this something that we should do? L'chatkila, is this really a type of conversion which should be countenanced nowadays? And these are issues that rabbinic bodies, such as the Rabbinical Council of America, such as the Chief Rabbinate of Israel, that they grapple with. They grapple with these issues. What should be the standard that we should follow? Even if we accepted that the conversions would be valid, then number one, it would very probably not be valid if the convert said explicitly they're not going to accept mitzvos. There's a tshuva, there's a famous response by Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, in which he says maybe we can apply the principle of dvarim shebelev einam dvarim, that as long as the convert keeps quiet, they won't get themselves into trouble. You can plead the fifth, right? You know, what you don't say won't hurt you. So even if the convert doesn't intend to keep mitzvos, as long as the convert shuts his mouth, then if they're not observant afterwards, we say that we can nonetheless work with the assumption that at the time of the conversion, they had the requisite sincerity, and therefore the conversion will stand. And even there, Rav Chaim Ozer himself, in the Kolodim, that it was an umdun of the Shabbos, they weren't going to keep kashrus, they weren't going to keep family purity, that even he seems to indicate that the conversion wouldn't be valid. So that's question number one. Question number two, even if the conversion would be valid in certain cases, if the Beis Din has not done a very careful job at ensuring that there'll be a performance of mitzvos, maybe one has to take into account the concern that was expressed by Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, namely that the Beis Din, by performing the conversion, might be facilitating future sins, when if the person would remain non-Jewish, they wouldn't be sinning. Now, the role of the Beis Din itself is perhaps another very important area of controversy that should be discussed, especially when we talk about the list. So, who's on the list? Who's on the list of an accepted diet and accepted Beis Din and so forth? Somebody, I remember after there was all this media coverage, and somebody came over to me and said, Rabbi Reis, did you make sure you're on the list? I said, I don't care if I'm on the list. I said the famous statement that Rav Akiva ben Mahalalel said to his son before he was nifter. He said, Ma'asecha yikarvucha, ma'asecha yirachakucha. That all you have to worry about in life is behaving properly and doing things properly. Don't worry about being on anybody's lists. Don't worry about whether you're on the okay list, the not okay list. You have to worry about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's list. That's the only list that really, really counts. What about these lists? What about this notion of who's qualified to serve as a Beis Din? Do we say any rabbi, any Orthodox rabbi, any Jewish person, anybody? Well, what are the contours and the role of the Beis Din? So there's a lot of discussion. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a number of tshuvos in which he talks about how a non-Orthodox Beis Din is not acceptable, that even if one could find grounds for limud zchus, grounds for leniency, if there wasn't a full acceptance of mitzvos because the convert thought that they're, you know, following whatever everybody else in their community is following. Nobody else in the community was that observant, so they thought that's okay. They thought that is observance, whatever. But he says when it comes to the Beis Din, that's sacrosanct. The Beis Din has to be made up of people who believe in Torah Min HaShemayim, that the Torah was given from heaven. They have to believe in the binding nature of all the mitzvahs. They have to be observant of themselves. So he says if you're dealing with a non-Orthodox Beis Din, so that for sure is going to be no good. And even those who are arguing for the acceptance of a universe of a conversions are not generally going so far as to say that if the conversions are performed outside of Orthodox auspices, that we would accept that as well. So according to pretty much everybody, you have to draw the line somewhere. The real question is, where exactly do you draw the line? I happen to have in my possession, I shouldn't say this too loudly, I have an unpublished tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein. You go into, you know, the rabbinate, so, you know, that's how you rank. You get a hold of unpublished tshuvas, you know. So I have an unpublished tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein in which he suggests in a particular case, he says that if you could really establish, and it's a big shas hadchak situation, and you can establish there was a gear that was done by a non-Orthodox Beis Din, but everybody who sat on the Beis Din was themselves fully shomer mitzvos, and the conversion candidate himself or herself was really sincere about accepting mitzvos. So if you had all of that, so he says, perhaps, why b'shas hadchak yesh makom l'achshir? It does have that lashon. It does have that lashon. He said, it's not published, don't know if it counts, but there is such a lashon, and it behooves those who are certainly involved in this enterprise of examining conversions 20, 30 years after the fact, especially with observant individuals, to take into consideration. Obviously, all of these different shitas, these different opinions, Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, Zatzal, quoted Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik himself, said that he's quoted by Rav Shechter Shlita in the Sefer Nefesh HaRav, in Divrei HaRav, that he said that in the event that there was not an Orthodox Beis Din, so we don't accept the person as definitely a convert, but we have to be worried about Safi Geirus. We have to be worried that maybe it should count for the event. There's an opinion defensible after the fact. It's not an opinion that's generally followed by other authorities. It's not the opinion that's followed by Bati Din throughout the world in general. But Rav Soloveitchik felt that it created at least a Safek Geirus situation where you have to treat the person, assuming that they went in with some level of sincerity, You have to treat the person as a suffragere, as somebody who at least has a doubtful status as Jewish, and therefore should probably go out of your way to help that person go through an undisputed, absolutely unquestionably valid Orthodox conversion after the fact. So what is the exact role that the Bezdin plays? I'd like to suggest that we find two lines of thought in classic rabbinic literature, and those two lines of thought help to account for many different disputes within the world of Geirus and how we approach Geirus. There's one line of thought that, where do we find the Bezdin in Har Sinai? If the idea is that we're replicating the Har Sinai experience whenever we do a Giyur, whenever somebody new comes into the fold of Judaism, so where do we find the Bezdin in Har Sinai? Where was the Bezdin in Har Sinai? There's no Bezdin in Har Sinai. So there are two different explanations. One explanation of the role of the Bezdin is given, the Rav of Soloveitchik gives this, this is source number 12, that we have a principle, Elokim Nitzav Adas Kel V'Kerav Elokim Yishpot, that a Bezdin sits in for the Shechina. The Bezdin sits in for the Divine Presence. Certainly the Divine Presence was at Har Sinai. The Torah was given directly by God to the Jewish people. So therefore, even though God is not making a revelation, at least an obvious appearance to every single conversion procedure the way that God very publicly appeared at Har Sinai, nonetheless, Hashchina Shruya BeBezdin Shel Shlosha, the Divine Presence resides upon every single Bezdin entity. So the Bezdin takes the place of the Shechina. Now the Beis HaLevi, in his commentary to the Torah, the Beis HaLevi says that the role of the Bezdin is that of essentially standing in for the Jewish people. That the Kadosh Baruch Hu made a covenant with Avraham Avinu, saying that throughout the generations of Ani Hinei Pisacha Yitzchak, whenever somebody wants to join the covenant of the Jewish people, then Ata Hamorsha Ve'Bal Koach. You, as the representative of the Jewish people, you will be the Bar Koach. The Jewish people will serve as the Bar Koach, as kind of the entity that will decide that they're going to bring in a convert, they're going to bring in an individual to join the midst of the Jewish people. That the role of the Bezdin is essentially to serve as the covenantal party representing the totality of the Jewish people. And we find that this is also, this discussion also appears in the Sefer Chavos Binyamin. That's a Sefer by Rosho Yisraeli. Rosho Yisraeli as well says that Yesod Ikari Agerus is that Kla Yisrael Maskim L'Kabel Osom L'Kaholom, that the people of Israel, the community of Israel, agrees to accept the convert. And this expresses itself through the fact that the Bezdin is serving as the representative, as the emissary, as the designee, as it were, of the totality of the Jewish people. And therefore, since the Bezdin is serving in this role, it is up to the Bezdin as the representatives of the Jewish people to make a determination of when to accept somebody and when not to accept somebody. And he points out that this is why the word that's used with respect to bringing in a convert is Kabbalah, Kiblu Geirut. That there has to be a Kabbalah, there has to be an affirmative decision which is made by the Bezdin to accept somebody into the fold. And these two different points of view of what the role the Bezdin is playing, whether the Bezdin is serving as a stand-in for the Divine Presence, or whether the Jewish people makes, meaning if it's standing in for the Divine Presence, so you can't be more of a chacham than a Kaddish Baruch Hu himself. A Kaddish Baruch Hu said you have to serve in this role, so somebody wants to convert, so then there's more limited discretion, arguably, on the part of the Bezdin in terms of what the Bezdin can do or not do. And if somebody wants to convert, they just say, I want to plop into the mikveh right now, I want to jump in, so then the Bezdin just has to do their job. And this may also be consistent with the discussion of what gives Bezdin authority nowadays to accept converts when we don't have a legitimately constituted Bezdin. We don't have smuchim. We don't have people who receive smicha directly from Moshe Rabbeinu. So one answer that's given in Tosfos is we apply the principle of shlichusayu ka'avdinun, that Bezdin serves as the emissaries of the previous rabbinical courts. And another answer, which is given by the Rashba and others, and Tosos elsewhere, is that we rely on the same pasuk that says that we can accept converts nowadays, even though they don't bring sacrifices, that says l'dorosechem, that there will always be converts throughout all the generations. So maybe, if you derive from l'dorosechem, it means it's kind of like an automatic process. If you understand that it derives from shlichusayu, that it has to be some type of a representation of the previous rabbinical court, so then you have to play by certain rules and regulations, and it's up to the rabbinical courts to decide whether a convert has satisfied certain standards or not. So this may affect all kinds of different questions. Number one, if there is an assessment that there's not going to be a proper Kabbalah so mitzvah, let's say that a Bezin is asked to convert a young minor child, and the Bezin doesn't think that the parents are going to observe mitzvahs, and therefore they feel it's not going to be such a schus, not going to be such a benefit for the child to perform the conversion. We know that's sort of the mechanism through which you can make a conversion for a minor child. Has to be some sort of a schus. So Rav Aram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, in his Shuvos, writes, well, since the whole mechanism is shlichusayu, he assumes that the mechanism is that the Bezdin are sort of the emissaries of previous rabbinical courts, therefore it has to satisfy certain criteria, that it has to be a benefit, it has to be that there would have been a loss to the person if they hadn't converted, so now there'll be a benefit because they'll receive reward for performing mitzvahs. They're not going to perform mitzvahs, they're not going to receive that reward. So therefore he says in such a case it has to be rejected. If you understand it's based on the Dorosechem, that you just have to, somebody comes, they want to convert, you have to do it throughout the generations, there might be more latitude. Might be more latitude in terms of, if we say b'diyevet, after the fact that things weren't perfect, that the conversion would be chal anyway. So also the question, can a bezdin take into account non-halakhic factors? The person who's converting is very wacky. They're very strange, like weird. I don't like this person. He's like weird, so I don't want to convert him. But the person is perfectly prepared to accept all the mitzvahs of the Torah. Do you have the discretion to reject that person or not? Rav Asher Weiss says a tshuva on that subject, and he says, well, if the person's weirdness and personality disorders are going to stop the person from fulfilling mitzvahs properly, so then you can reject the person. But if the person's personality problems are just like, you know, the personality problems that we all have, but it's not necessarily going to prevent the convert from performing mitzvahs, so then you have to accept the converts. This might also depend on the same question. Is the Bezdin just kind of like, you know, standing there as an obligatory thing that you have to do this, in which case the person's prepared to accept the mitzvahs and do everything else so the Bezdin doesn't have the discretion to reject them? Or do we say that, no, maybe it's based on the shlichusayu idea that the Bezdin has to make a determination on behalf of Klal Yisrael. Do we, Klal Yisrael, do we want to accept this convert or not? In which case, there might be a little bit more discretion. Also the question, I'll throw out another nafkamina, another possible ramification. I could go on for a long time, but then I'd be past my 45-minute limit. So another possible ramification would be, there's a question raised by the Noda Behuda. If a pregnant woman converts in front of the Bezdin didn't know that the woman was pregnant. So does the conversion work for the fetus or not? And the Noda Behuda leaves that as a suffix. He's not entirely sure. So this might also depend on the same question, that if the Bezdin has to affirmatively decide on behalf of Klal Yisrael, we're accepting this person. They didn't know the fetus is converting, so maybe the conversion wouldn't be good if they didn't know about it. If, on the other hand, it's based on the Dorosechem, it's based on, no, it's just we're told throughout the generations. A person follows the criteria, they immerse in front of a Bezdin, so then the conversion is automatically valid. So then, even if the Bezdin didn't learn, there's a lot of thought, and there's a lot of sources and a lot of application of the sources that go into every single decision that the Bezdin has to make. And I think that, you know, sometimes when we talk about the degrees of flexibility, it might, believe it or not, actually depend upon the lumbus. Torah learning is relevant to every single decision, even if it appears to be something which is a policy decision. Ultimately, it all boils down to halacha, and halacha all boils down to the learning process and the application of the sources to the different situations. So how did the new system get created? This whole GPS system. So what used to exist, what used to be in place, when I started out at the Bezdin, is that everybody, there were private conversions done by different rabbis, and there were varying degrees of standards that were practiced by different rabbis, and some really didn't have good standards at all. When I say didn't have good standards, I meant where even people who never opened up a blot of Gemara in their life would know that there were bad standards. Where they would say, you know what, you want to convert to Judaism, we take this very seriously, you have to show your seriousness. The way you show your seriousness is you give me $20,000, that shows you're really sincere and you can be converted tomorrow. And you'd have conversions like that. There were people who were doing conversions along those lines. Or people who would do conversions on the basis of a community. There was some very important person in the shul who wanted to marry a non-Jewish woman who the person met. The person wasn't that observant himself, and the woman didn't know anything about Judaism, was never really going to observe anything herself, but because of the pressures that the rabbi felt, that they needed to perform the conversion to remain in good graces with the people in their shul, so they would perform the conversion, and that was also not really so good, and anybody would say, that doesn't look so good. And there were conversions performed by rabbis who unfortunately just didn't know how to do conversions properly. So there was a whole bunch of conversions performed by some rabbi who was out in the boondocks somewhere, where he would bring the other two rabbis who were out with him in the boondocks whenever he wanted to do a conversion, and one of the two other rabbis was his brother. And if you have two brothers who sit on a bethin, so that is an automatically invalid bethin. You need a bethin for conversion, so the conversion is invalid. So what would happen is that rabbinic bodies all over the world, including the chief rabbinate, felt that this was not something they couldn't rely on every single conversion that came to them, even if it was an Orthodox conversion, because they didn't know which had a good reputation, which didn't have a good reputation. So they would come to a place like the Bethan of America, and they would ask for it, and different people would ask for Ishurim, they would ask for certifications with respect to their conversion. And then we would have our Abesdin, Rabbi Gedaliah Dov Schwartz Shlita. He would examine every single case, who the rabbis were, what the process was, and would decide whether to give a certification or not to give it. It's not like everybody got a certification, lots of people didn't get certifications, and he made lots of enemies, because he wouldn't give certifications if the rabbis were in synagogues that didn't have a machitza and things of that sort. And it created a lot of tension, and it was really very bad for the Gerim, because he had a lot of sincere converts who didn't necessarily know where to go, and then they would go someplace where there wouldn't be a certification. And at a certain point, the rabbinical court, the chief rabbinate in Israel, turned to us and said, we don't even want to rely on your certifications anymore. If Rabbi Schwartz himself performs the conversion, we're happy to accept it. Somebody else performed the conversion. It's not under the auspices of the Betin, so we don't want to recognize that conversion anyway, because what good is your certification? You didn't oversee the conversion process. So for all of these reasons and others, the Rabbinical Council of America came to the conclusion that it would better serve the Gerim, it would better serve the converts if there was a system of rabbinical courts that they could list on the website in their to the community, that these were rabbinical courts that were recognized, and that anybody who would go to them, they wouldn't need any sure, they wouldn't need a certification, they would automatically be recognized. And what would the comfort level be of a place like the Chief Rabbinate? The comfort level would be that all of these different rabbinical courts would agree to abide by a certain set of standards and rules. So we worked very hard. We put together a committee that's like hard, like meetings and stuff like that. And we drafted, you know, these protocols, which, you know, if you read them, you could see that it was drafted by a committee if you try to read through them. But but what we tried to actually draft some sort of a unified set of protocols. And I remember meeting the Sephardic chief rabbi in charge of the Bati Din, and they were very, very impressed and excited by these Noalim, by these protocols that were being followed. There was an understanding in place that if anybody went through these conversion courts, that we wouldn't have to have this whole system of Ishurim, this whole system of certifications, where you'd have to accept some and reject others, and then when they get to Eretz Yisrael, they would have to go through some bureaucratic process anyway to see whether this Ishur is accepted, not accepted, and in order to avoid that entire rigmarole and all those problems, this was much, much better. So what are the advantages and what are the disadvantages of the system? The advantages are there's a clear process with clear expectations. There are protocols that, assuming everybody follows them, they're good protocols in terms of making sure that money is not charged in some exorbitant fashion, making sure that there are clear guidelines as to what's expected of the candidate. There's quality control to a certain degree with respect to the conversions and how they're performed. There is an avoidance, hopefully, of the types of issues of money and corruption and of ineptitude that I described to you, although you discover over the years that even with all of your attempts to narrow down the Bati Din to those that accept the standards, a Beis Din might accept the standards, but there might nonetheless be somebody who is just a bad guy. Who ends up as part of the system, and you have to figure out how to deal with that. And then one of the other major advantages is that there's international acceptance, that people know that, this is part of a system, a network which is respected, and the Ger doesn't have to worry about the conversion being accepted years after the fact, or 20, 30, 50 years down the road. What are the disadvantages? Disadvantages are the possibility of a bureaucratic process, possibility that there's less flexibility. Once you articulate standards, less flexibility in terms of how you can navigate the needs of a specific situation. As we mentioned earlier, sometimes there's a need for greater flexibility, though we try to build that in, but whenever you have a system, it's harder to have that. Number two, that if you're going to have a system, then it becomes difficult to monitor to make sure that everybody is doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. For the most part, things have worked out beautifully. Manhattan Beis Din was created, never existed before. One centralized Beis Din for Manhattan, they do like 100 conversions a year, and it's shameless affairs. It's really something wondrous and beautiful. On the other hand, sometimes, you know, people could do things that aren't so good. That's human nature, but that happens. Number three, there's the concern that those rabbis who would want to continue to do conversions privately, they might end up finding their conversions marginalized. That you know, some sense not part of, you know, some general system. So maybe it would be more difficult having their conversions accepted than in the past. These are disadvantages. These are things that we struggle with. I mentioned at the very beginning of the presentation, my goal here is to spell out the facts, to spell out how things have come about the way they are, what some of the halakha considerations are, what some of the advantages and some of the disadvantages are. It doesn't mean that we've achieved a perfection, but this is an explanation as to how we've gotten to where we have gotten. When we had the horrific situation that occurred with a Beis Din that was in Washington, D.C., I won't go into greater detail, it can speak for itself. All you have to do is say Beis Din, Washington, D.C., and everybody kind of knows the rest, right? So when we dealt with that, so what to me, besides, you know, dealing with the horror of it, but what to me was actually very, very encouraging is that, you know, one thought process that came to mind is maybe just do away with this entire system, because it's impossible to be able to monitor what every single person's going to do. You're going to have all kinds of guidelines. What are you going to put in the guidelines? Oh yeah, when a woman's in the mikveh, don't take out a gun and shoot her. You know, there's a limitation in terms of the instructions that you can delineate in order to ensure integrity and in order to ensure perfection. So maybe it's just not worth it. But what we found is that immediately in the aftermath of that entire incident, Many rabbis from that area, many people, men and women who were conversion candidates, who were interested in conversion from that area, turned in our neighborhood because we really want this. We don't really want to benefit from it. We recognize that mostly we're dealing with really good, sincere people, and because somebody does, you know, something wrong, that doesn't mean that the entire system should be torpedoed. We just want it to be, we want it to be resurrected, and resurrected in optimal fashion. And we work very closely with the members of the Vod, the Rabbanim, the rabbis who are in the Silver Spring, Washington, D.C. area, and we put together, I made a number of trips myself, together with Rabbi Ram, who's the Menahel of the Beis Din of Manhattan, and we worked with the rabbis in the area, and we actually constructed a new Beis Din in the area. It's done a number of conversions, and something which is very, very much appreciated. So what we discovered is that the converts want this type of a system. They want a system where there are clear guidelines, where there's a strong enough infrastructure that even when there are problems, the problems can be resolved. The problems can be addressed. Where people care about them, and where there is some sort of an assurance of a quality, assurance of an acceptable halakhic procedure, and where there would be acceptance ultimately without challenges with respect to their conversions. And the other thing that I've noticed is a potential advantage, and I'm not, again, selling anything, I'm just telling you my own observations as to how things have happened. My own other observation is that it also, the more that you network in this fashion, the more you can have conferences and gatherings of rabbinical courts and rabbinical authorities to talk about some of the contemporary issues in Geirus and how to address them. You know, like one difficult, sensitive issue. I'll just throw out there. So you have a candidate with a same-sex attraction. Can you, but the person is prepared to accept the yoke of commandments and to work with the Beis Din. How do you go about working with them? So we're able to put together a conference. We had Dr. Pelkovich speak about, you know, how do you go about dealing with such candidates? Can you have such candidates? And we actually develop protocols for working with candidates, you know, who have, you know, those issues, just like people have all kinds of issues, but nonetheless are prepared to accept the yoke of commandments. And that's something that now we're able to do with sensitivity and integrity at the same time. Or we had a number of female candidates who had to put their hair in dreadlocks. I had one case where the woman, the only way she could manage her hair was, she was African American, and the only way she could manage her hair was through having, you know, them curled around so that the hair was twisted and turned and put into different dreadlocks on her head. And if we would treat the dreadlocks as a chatzitza, she would have to shave her head, basically, and become satmar, and she didn't necessarily want to be. So the question was, Could we develop protocols to enable somebody like that to go to the mikveh without counting as a chatzitza? And I wrote a whole tshuva about it, and I shared it with Rav Schwartz and Rabbi Willig, where we agreed, at least in this particular case, you know, with this woman, because she couldn't manage her hair in any other way, similar to the sheets of the Mordechai. It talks about when a person has a disease that requires their hairs to be curled up so that they're allowed to be tovelis in mikveh, they're allowed to immerse, and I showed how that should be applicable in this case. And we're able to resolve those types of issues in order to help converts in the modern age. So a lot of misconceptions about lists. The only list that's out there is the list of participating Bati Din. It should not be. I just want to make this 100% clear. It should not be the case that anybody who's trying to help converts should feel that the way to help converts is by discrediting other conversions. And that certainly, if that is anybody's intention, or if that is implicit in any of the literature that's out there, then I think that has to be addressed, and I think that has to be resolved. Because the goal over here is not to do that whatsoever. The goal is that we should all figure out how to have systems in place that are really going to help the converts, ensure that there's integrity in the process, that nobody is treated badly or unfairly, but also to make sure that the process is as smooth as possible. But it's not to rule out the possibility of rabbis who want to do private conversions and do it in a proper fashion from doing it and having their conversions recognized. I think that would be a mistake. I don't think that that's right in any way. By the same token, it's also a big mistake for those who are critics of the system, and there's something to criticize all over. As they say, kashim gaming sokas apakas means that there'll always be what to criticize, but for critics, somebody who we think is also a convert, and we're going to bring into question that person's conversion in order to show just how bad the system is. That's terrible. It's terrible to put somebody else in the limelight agenda. If the agenda is to help converts, how are you helping converts by openly questioning a conversion that nobody else had brought into question? So I think that there's a lot of or assuming it's a conversion. So I think that there's a lot over here that could be that requires very careful consideration, requires very careful soul searching, and requires a lot of sensitivity. So I'll just conclude, and then we'll take some questions with three morals and messages. Number one, halacha is a living and thriving system that affects our lives and our institutions, and we have to recognize the relevance of halacha not only to our private lives but to our public lives. Number two, the process of joining the Jewish people teaches us about also the process of what it means to belong to the Jewish people. Whether we like it or not, we have to develop collaborative mechanisms which are founded on halacha, mutual respect, and the need to ensure that the exemplars of halacha are themselves exemplary. And number three, we see the importance of having a workable framework. And having a good workable framework in place, rather than just leaving everything as chaos, which I saw what it was like when I started at the Bez, and I saw what it was like when it was chaos, and it was not better. I don't think that it would be an improvement to go back to a state of chaos. And having some sort of a framework in place is definitely a mitzvah of Avtemis Agir, of loving the convert. The Gemara Pesachim says, Lohikla HaKadosh Baruch Hu Espenei Solovein Umos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu only put us into Golos, El Kadesh Yitoso Lehem Gerim, so that we will bring back converts. We'll have enough converts so that all the people who are supposed to belong to the Jewish people will belong to the Jewish people, and the Mashiach will be able to come. I think this means not only bringing converts, but also bringing in a perfection of the process of conversion itself. So especially now that we just began Rosh Chodesh Av, we should be very mindful of the example of Aaron HaKohen, who was Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, somebody who was a pursuer of peace, Oev Esabrios, the Mekarav on the Torah, somebody who loved people and brought them to Torah. So through developing a framework that is harmonious, compassionate, and cooperative, we will help bring about the restoration of the Beis HaMikdash, as it says, Yehi Shalom Mechelech Shavah Be'amun Osayach, L'man HaKayv Re'ayah, Dabar Nashalom Bach, L'man Beis Hashem Elokeinu, Avak Shatov Lach, Hashem Oz, L'mo Yiten, Hashem Yivarech, Esamo Vashalom. Thank you very much. Okay, I'll now take some questions. Yes?
I have two questions. Question number one. Why is it such a big deal conversion wasn't the greatest, you know, in the world. It's not like divorce where you're worried about Montanus and this and that. Why don't they just make you across the board when they go to somebody?
Why don't they make what across the board?
If someone's already had a conversion, okay, then why don't they make their next over finding what should be, was it good or not? So what? So the person had a conversion. What's the problem? If they're interested in marrying someone religious,
you're saying, why should a person ask for an Ishura to begin with?
Why should they ask? Someone comes to Israel and they say, I'm converted. They have a letter from three rabbis that converted that. Okay, What's the need to put it in question?
So that's asking to explain somebody else's position. I can explain the facts from our own perspective, from the perspective of rabbinic bodies all over the world. What they would generally say is, well, nobody would expect them to honor a non-Orthodox conversion. They wouldn't consider a non-Orthodox conversion to be valid. So the first question they have to ask is, were these rabbis Orthodox? How do you define Orthodox? Let's say the rabbis received an Orthodox smicha, but they took on a conservative congregation. Is that considered to be Orthodox? It's something which even certain, you know, rabbis who are extremely sensitive about accepting conversions across the board would not have accepted conversions, you know, from that particular rabbi. Is this a case where maybe they have to worry that the Beis Din didn't know what it was doing, and this was one of those cases where you had two brothers sit together as rabbis on the Beis Din, in which case the Beis Din had reputations that they were just things? I think that rabbinic bodies, rightly or wrongly, all over the world, just became much more circumspect. I'm not saying it's not a good idea, but it's not the reality. The same way that the chief rabbinate turned to us, we don't control the chief rabbinate. Halavai, we control the chief rabbinate. They're nice people, the chief rabbis, but we don't control what goes on in the chief rabbinate. And the same way they came to us and they said, you can write Yishurim until you're blue in the face. They didn't say until you're blue in the face. They said, you can write Yishurim, you can write these certifications. We're not prepared to rely on certifications anymore. They're not prepared to rely upon any conversion just because they happen to be Orthodox rabbis. They're not prepared to rely upon Yishurim, upon certifications anymore. Even if every single case would either have an Yishur, would have a certification, or there would be an implicit certification because it's an Orthodox rabbi, they're simply not prepared to rely upon it. Why are they not prepared to rely upon it? I'm not going to put words in their mouths, but I think it has something to do with these various concerns and these various considerations. Should one of the considerations be, oh, I don't know what the standard was of this Beis Din with respect to Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs. I heard that this rabbi isn't as exacting when it comes to what it means to accept the yoke of commandments as other rabbis. Here I would say that we should allow for more flexibility within our tradition. I don't know, should I say that? Maybe I'll get into trouble. That if there are legitimate opinions out there that say that you can have certain flexibility, and you know that a certain Orthodox Beis Din has integrity and knows how to perform a conversion, and they might have a slightly different standard, but they still, you know, wouldn't accept somebody who says, chutz mi davar echad, I affirmatively reject a particular mitzvah, so then I think that there should be a greater acceptance. Yes, I think that we accept such conversions all the time of rabbis who performed conversions 30, 40, 50 years ago in America, where many conversions were along those lines, where people didn't necessarily have the same level of shmiras and mitzvos that they have nowadays, and yet we're not going to go back in time. I hope we're not going back in time. We shouldn't go back in time and reassess and reevaluate and start rejecting conversions that were prepared, that were performed during that period, where there are children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren who have all been brought up Jewish and are living impeccably Jewish lives. So therefore, I think you have to break up your question into different types of situations. I want to take one question from each person. Yes.
There's an explicit Rambam, which nobody refers to, that says the Beis Din asks, if the Beis Din asks the potential convert, Ger, why do you want to join the Jewish people who are suffering so much in the world and that have so much trouble? And he says, I like the Jewish people and I want to be part of them. Mekablim oso miyad. There's nothing mentioned over there about Kabbalah's Torah and stuff.
Well, it does say, it says, Modino, so mitzvos kalos, and mitzvos chamuris, that they are informed about the different mitzvos, and then there's even a discussion that appears in the Gemara about, you know, different types of mitzvos that are discussed with the converts, and schar onesh, and the reward and punishment that they're going to receive from eating kosher, not kosher, observing Shabbos, not observing Shabbos. So are things that are mentioned in the Gemara. However, what the Gemara doesn't, you know, mention explicitly is the notion of the Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos. Quite, you know, that, you know, you have to, appears from other sources. You could say, well, this is Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos, when you're telling them a little bit, and they say, yeah, I'm prepared to accept all of it. So there's a famous tshuva by the Chemda Shlomo, and that's in the sources. Didn't have a chance to go through every single source. It's in the sources. The Chemda Shlomo says, well, it appears even the Rambam says that if you didn't tell them everything, the conversion is still valid. So he says, we draw a distinction between Naseh and Nishma. We draw a distinction between teaching them everything, that even if we haven't taught them everything, the conversion can still be valid. But Kabbalah, their acceptance of commandments, they're saying, I'm prepared to do whatever it takes, even though I haven't yet learned. Naseh, even though I haven't yet Nishma, I haven't yet learned everything just yet. That, he says, is absolutely indispensable. Now, there are others who say, no, just like not knowing everything is not indispensable, so even if they haven't, you know, explicitly accepted everything, that's not, you know, necessarily the end of the world either. The Shulchan Aruch, who counts, you know, obviously as, you know, our guide as to what we assume the halakha is, the Shulchan Aruch says that the one thing that we know is absolutely with that, you know, principle, and then the question is, what really constitutes a proper Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos? What constitutes a proper acceptance of Yoke of Commandments? How well informed do they need to be? How explicit does it have to be? To what degree do we discount what we call Dvarim Shibalev if deep down they're not planning to do it, but they don't express it explicitly? So is that a problem? Is that not a problem? So those are some of the fine-tuned points where the reality is that different poskim, the different rabbinic authorities have disagreed on these issues. Yes?
Given your three principles, as you said, that you summarized in the end, and given these two questions that were asked, do you think that the standards in Israel should be different for the standards of Chutz La'aretz, considering that people have come here and they're living here already, the people that came from the former Soviet Union, if they're living here in a Jewish country and they may or may not be Jewish, do you think the standards here should be a little more lenient in terms of accepting...
So Rav Unterman thought that the standards maybe should be more lenient in Eretz Yisrael. I leave that for the post-game of Eretz Yisrael. There's a Tosos in Yavamos that kind of suggests that as well. I leave that for the post-game in Eretz Yisrael to decide what the standards should be in Eretz Yisrael. From my vantage point, when I spoke about my first-hand exposure to the facts, so the facts I'm exposed to are the facts on the ground in Chutz La'aretz, in America. One nice thing about the way things work in America is that we have a very strong internal communal structures in terms of the way that the Orthodox Kehillah is formed in different communities in America. And once again, one of the things that we do is we make sure that the convert is very well integrated into a particular community. And generally speaking, after the conversion takes place, when they're already well integrated into the Orthodox community, they stay in that community. We actually revisit the Geirus 1 year after the fact, and we stay in touch just to see, you know, where the Geir is holding and how they're doing. And generally speaking, I'd like to say 90% of the time, because that's what the people in the field are telling me, but generally speaking, something around, you know, the 90% or more of the time, they're actually remaining within the observant community after the conversion. For whatever reason, that seems to be much harder in Eretz Yisrael. I think there are lots of different realities when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, and we don't grapple with that. What's hard for us to understand is how, you know, people, you know, there's this notion of, the chief rabbinate isn't accepting all the conversions that are coming from America. The chief rabbinate isn't accepting all the conversions that the rabbinate itself is performing. So we have no comprehension, we have no musag of how that is. How do you have rabbinic course that you create and then you reject the conversions that they perform? We don't get it, okay? So therefore, the way things work over here is just, you know, completely beyond our comprehension or explication. We can't answer those questions. Okay, yes.
Yeah. Just if I can ask a clarification, you mentioned, if I'm understanding it correctly, that the one thing that, even with all the rules, that it's firm, is that if someone says chutz min mitzvah hat, that already would be a standard that we shouldn't accept. Then you gave the example, and I don't want to get controversial, I just want to ask for clarification about the same-sex attraction, that you were able to find the what, etc. Is that because in that particular case, the person was working with the Beis Din to overcome their attraction, or was that an example of where they said chutz min mitzvah hat and they were accepted anyway?
We're not psychiatrists. However, and it could be that it's something that a person can't, you know, overcome. But what we're dealing with is a person who's saying, I'm accepting all the mitzvahs of the Torah, including that one. A person might have certain taivos, they might have, you know, certain desires, they might have certain challenges in life, whatever those challenges happen to be. But they're accepting the entirety of the Torah. It's like, you know, Moshe Feinstein talks about a person who knew that they would have a challenge after the conversion, that they might be tempted to work on the last days of Yontif during Pesach, and they, you know, were hoping that they wouldn't, you know, succumb to that. In the end, they did. And then they were wondering whether, so 20 years later, whether the conversion was valid or not. And they asked Moshe Feinstein, is my conversion no good, you know, given that I was thinking in the back of my mind that I might do it, and I ended up doing it. So Moshe said, part of being Jewish is having a Yetzer Tov, a Yetzer Ra, that we have a Yetzer to do things sometimes, and we try to overcome it, but there's a reason that we have Yom Kippur. There's a reason it's Yom Kippur, because people aren't necessarily always going to be perfect. So a person says, I'm going to accept everything, I'm going to try my best, so that's, you know, something which is, they have a challenge, and is ultimately accepting upon themselves the observance of that mitzvah, however challenging it might be. And yes, it's complicated, and I'm just giving you, I'm answering you in broad strokes, but of course, we understand, it's very, very nuanced and very complicated, of course. Okay, I'll take from the women's side a couple of questions, and then we'll end there with that. Yes?
So you said earlier
75% of converts are women, by the way. It's a very interesting statistic. Yeah.
You said earlier, someone asked you if you were on the list. You said, I don't care if I'm on the list. And now you just said, we don't grapple with that, you know, with some of the questions dealing with Eretz Yisrael. But what you're ending up saying by saying that is that our Gerim are okay as long as they stay in America, and if they go somewhere else, it's not my problem. But you're sitting in a congregation full of people who have connections to both America and Israel. So how is that good enough, you know, to say that my standards are fine and I'm not worrying about what's happening in Israel?
Thank you so much for asking that question, because it gives me the opportunity to clarify if I didn't convey such an impression. It was not my intention at all to convey such an impression. It's precisely because we care so much that we control everything that we possibly can control. That which we can't control, we understand, is outside of our hands. But to the degree that, of course, it's extremely important that the convert should have the comfort level of knowing that they're going to be accepted in Eretz Yisrael. So that's why we've worked very, very closely with the Rabbanut HaRashit in Eretz Yisrael throughout this entire process, and we continue to work very, very closely with the Rabbanut HaRashit. The system of the GPS was not created based on the mandate of the Rabbanut HaRashit. I think that's a true question, a true statement. It was created based on the fact that it was felt over the course of many years by the Rabbinical Council of America, by the Beit Din of America, that it would be advantageous to have a more streamlined system. But there was a benefit to working together with the Chief Rabbi of Israel, because they said the fact that you are creating the system in which we can view all the conversions of anybody who converts through any of these Batei Din as basically being effectively under the auspices of the Beis Din, that gives us the necessary comfort level that we need to automatically accept all of these conversions. Ve'kach hoya, ve'kach hove, and I hope kach yiyah. That's the way that it has been. All of these converts who have gone through the system of the GPS have been automatically accepted. That has happened. Whatever has been out there in the news, whatever has been out there in the media, does not relate to GPS conversions. So to those who converted through this network, they do have their conversions automatically recognized. The point that I'm making is a different point. The point that I'm making is a different point, which is that by virtue of creating this network to help the converts to go through the system, that's not at all intended to disadvantage other converts. It's to make something available where there will be a more streamlined system. I think that anybody who goes through a legitimate conversion process should have an easy entryway to a full-fledged international acceptance by all rabbinic bodies. But to the extent that, of course, we have to deal with the realities of other rabbinic bodies that are out there in the world, we have recognized the importance of maintaining this good and close relationship with the Chief Rabbinate of Israel in that regard. Okay, I want to thank you very, very much. I can take your questions privately, and I hope that we should all be zocheh when Tisha B'Av comes around to be celebrating the Binyan Bais HaMikdash HaShlishi. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, again, I want to thank Mrs. Erin Reese and her family for sponsoring this year, in memory of Mr. Harry Reese. We now have collation in the back. We do have a cholent. For those people that have been complaining that it's been a collation cholent, you're in luck. Today it's parv. It's in the back of parv cholent. Your wish is my command. We have parv cholent and kugel in the back, including all the other foods as well. Yeah, or Netzach. Okay, I'll see you.